bloke who went on track in a completely stock Nissan Elgrand.
It's got a fridge, so I don't even have to stop to feed the kids on that long journey. What?
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the Classics World Chat Show. We're now weekly every Friday, and we very much appreciate all the technical feedback last week. We're trying not to be too zoomed in. Hopefully we've sorted out the sound glitches, but this is only episode 2 of our new format, so bear with us. And last week was such a resounding success, the editor of Classic Car Buyer, Jeff Ruggles, has gone on holiday, so he's not around. So for the next 2 episodes, we've actually got our special guest, Jamie King, who's joining us. He was formerly the editor of Fast Forward and Performance Mini and many other things, and now he gets involved in all manner of our motoring stuff, from magazines, events and websites and YouTube channels. And you'd have seen him on the Classics World YouTube channel doing various demonstrations, most recently on how to rust-proof a Ford Orion Keep. So not a bad thing. So welcome, Jamie, and hello again, Joe.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Pleasure to be joining you as always. And for audio listeners, yeah, we appreciate last time we there were various visual things we did sort of mention, because obviously you can't see us, which some would argue is a good thing. So we'll try and work on that this week as well.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to pull back from the camera so you don't quite see as many lines and wrinkles on my face. So that's no bad thing. But anyway, listen, gents, let's get into it. We would normally rely on our resident editor of Classic Car Buyer to give us a rundown of the news, but as he's not here, he's spending some much-needed time with his family. I will skip to Japfest, which was our Japanese celebration down at Silverstone last Sunday, so just under a week ago from when you'll be listening to this.
It's why we're all looking absolutely worn out as well, isn't it?
It was yes, a busy show, that, yeah.
I'm completely out of kilter because it's been a long back-to-back week or so, but it was a phenomenal success. I think it's probably the biggest Japfest we've ever done. It's certainly the biggest in the 10-year history it's been at Silverstone, and I would say it's probably the biggest Japanese car gathering in Europe. But the weather was on our side, which was great. We've actually had snow before at Japfest.
So that made it pretty exciting.
Yes, to have bright sunshine and everything was
a
relief.
Glad it wasn't windy.
But yeah, there was about 25,000 people there in total in the end, over 3,600 club and display cars, plus various curated displays.
It was fantastic. It was such a busy event. I mean, I always say Japfest is probably the most energetic event we do. And it did just feel so buzzing. There was so much going on. There was always something going on track. And I have to give a massive shout out to the bloke who went on track in a completely stock Nissan Elgrand and drove it like he stole it. Absolute hero.
Yeah, that was excellent. He was lifting a wheel, wasn't he? He went round Loughfield.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary.
Hanging about then.
No, it's unbelievable.
But I've got to say, I think that's one of the things I love about the event is that it's got that lovely blend of really old school stuff. You'll have Honda Actis and Datsun 120Ys and Nissan Cubes, Mazda MX-5s in abundance, as you'd imagine. The Mazda MX-5 Owners Club were there, so stay tuned for a walk around of their stand coming out this weekend, I believe, Joe.
It is indeed. Yeah.
But, you know, you've got all that kind of fairly bread and butter JDM stuff right up to real top Nissan Skyline builds that probably run into the six figures. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just such a blend. The JDM scene is alive and well if you base it on Japfest. It was a fantastic
event.
So, it's so diverse as well, isn't it? Like you say, you've got the cheaper end of the spectrum right up to six figure builds and stuff. I mean, so no matter what your budget is, you can get involved with that JDM scene and you know, be really welcome. So it's lovely to see.
Yeah, exactly. There's like you said, there's 18-year-olds there in like £1,000 Nissan Micras. They've put, you know, a nice little set of wheels on. And actually, you know, a great example in the car park, one of the clubs, there was a Honda NSX done up in like a Bilstein livery, looked really, really cool. And it was parked next to a 1.3 Starlet. Absolutely brilliant. Loved it.
So here's a debate that we often have when we discuss Japfest at Silverstone. Should Protons and Kias and Hyundais come to Japfest?
No. I'm on the fence because it's not called Asia Fest. So in theory,
it's
no.
Not Asia Fest.
In theory, no. But on the other hand, it's sort of within the spirit. You know, they're not bringing a BMW or a Rover. I suppose a Rover would be Japanese in some cases, but they're sort of within the spirit of it. And actually, the way we keep the car scene inclusive is by not shutting people out. So I wouldn't do it personally, but I wouldn't turn them away either.
It's really interesting. I tell you what does tend to happen. So we start by saying, yes, absolutely, they're all welcome. Because for one thing, there are many Protons, for example, that are based on Japanese stuff. It's all Mitsubishi. Old Mitsubishi stuff underneath, right? And the same can be said of certain generations of older Kias and Hyundais and stuff like that. It's all old J-tin, isn't it, at the end of the day? And then you've got things like that aren't based on any Japanese stuff, but the Kia Stinger, for example, they've got a great club that's turned up at Japfest before, and what a fabulous car, and should or shouldn't it be invited? I think there's a Hyundai N Sport register or something like that to bring all the sporty stuff. So we tie ourselves in knots about this the whole time, and in the end we kind of say they're welcome, but also we are aware that we've run out of space, believe it or not, in the national paddock area that we have. So we're never quite sure. We don't have a
That's
a clear
the reason
rule.
I'd say no, is like if you've got a car park or a club area full of Korean cars, but Japanese cars haven't been able to attend because we've sold out of space, that's why. If it wasn't a sellout, I'd be more inclined to say, yeah, bring them all along and make it like an inclusive event. But that's the reason I'm on the fence.
I don't disagree with that.
You've got a Hyundai or Hyundai Stella or Pony, bring one of them along because I love the whole thing.
Yeah, they're very cool.
Do you know, you talk about that. I'm sure there was a Hyundai Stella that was doing the rounds a few years ago that had a V8 engine in it.
Right.
Yes.
It's
a Cortina, aren't they? It's a
Cortina,
yeah.
Yeah. Nuts. Yeah, so that was absolutely fabulous. But yeah, I think Japfest was a roaring success, and it's so great to see it. You know, in spite of everything going on at the moment, you know, financial troubles for people and the way the world is at the moment with not wanting, you know, old cars on the road, the fact that an event like that can still go on and still be so massive and people enjoy it so enthusiastically, wonderful. Even if you're not into Japanese cars, that's to be celebrated.
We were worried, you know, about obviously the state of the world at the moment. We were a little bit worried about petrol prices and what impact that was going to do on event attendance. And obviously, I don't know what petrol is at the moment at time of recording, but what, 155, 160 a litre here in Blighty? You know, and diesel is sort of 190, I think, and super unleaded, if you want to put the good stuff in, is knocking on the door of £2 now per litre, certain services and stuff. So we don't know the answer to this, but is it going to start affecting people's willingness to travel further afield? Are they going to be a bit more spontaneous with how they go to shows? Will they go to more breakfast meaty stuff and less big high profile stuff? I guess we just won't know really and see how the summer plays out.
I think it's the same with anything, is that ultimately when you're using cars as a hobby rather than as a means to get about, suddenly you have to look at it as if you have the spare money for that hobby, you're more inclined to use it. You know, it's no different as people who play golf or do fishing. You know, if you go and spend £1,000 on a set of golf clubs, you're not going to use that for anything other than playing golf, but golf is your hobby, so you enjoy that. And I think it's the same. Yes, a tank of petrol at 100 quid is a lot of money to spend, but when you're using it to go and do something you enjoy, like go to a car show, look at it as an investment in your mental health at the end of the day, because everyone's got to have something to enjoy. So if you're in a position that you can, keep doing it, because that's how you keep the scene alive.
Yeah,
100%.
No, I very much agree.
Become more prescriptive, that's all. I think instead of doing like 3 meets a month or something like that, they might just drop down to doing one, or instead of doing the big show and 2 local meets, they might just do the big show, because you can plan it in a bit better. But yeah, I think it will have an effect. Hopefully it'll sort itself out soon. I mean, we're worried about it in August. So yeah.
Yes, exactly. Otherwise, next year we'll be doing EV Fest instead.
God, drop your thoughts in the comments below.
Yes, I am obviously joking, but yes, let's hope it never comes to that. Actually, when I left Silverstone on Sunday, it was quite funny because I was driving through the Copse Tunnel. So anyone knows that it's the tunnel that goes underneath the circuit and goes to one of the exits. And obviously it's basically folklore. You've got to do it. It's mandatory that when you drive through that Copse Tunnel in something tasty, you've got to blip the throttle, get a bit of reverberation off those concrete walls. So of course I'm leaving in my company electric vehicle, and people are sort of like gesturing to me to blip the throttle as if I've got any engine noise whatsoever. They might have been taking the mickey, I suspect.
You think?
It was about as un-Japfest as it could be, my electric Volkswagen. But anyway, never mind. But on the complete polar opposite of that spectrum, let's move on to our buying topic of this week. And with Jamie being a resident Ford man, I thought, let's not do Fords whatsoever. Let's go to big BHP bargains. I didn't really want this to be anything more prescriptive than that. Something that has plenty of power, plenty of grunt about it, but isn't overly expensive. I think I suggested that we would spend no more than £15,000. So I didn't want it to be lottery money things. but neither did I want to skimp and end up down at sort of £2,000-3,000 mark, because the risk of that is you either end up buying certain types of car.
There are a lot of bargains to be had for cars like this at the moment, partly because of the aforementioned fuel prices and partly because of the recent, I call it road tax. Yes, we know it's not actually road tax, but the recent rises in that means a lot of cars suddenly are cheap because they're £760 a year to tax. So their loss will be
lost. But also you end up probably going into blowy uppy territory in terms of cars that may have not seen the best side of maintenance.
The age is a challenge for me, actually, because there's a lot of stuff in that sort of like 10-year mark that is big power. So it fits the criteria, but it's probably too new. And they say the older you get, you start getting into 300 horsepower, which was big power for back in the day. But compared to a 600 horsepower modern Audi, it's, you know what I mean, it's not there. So it's like, where do you draw the line?
Well, exactly. And we never specify what big BHP looked like either. Because like you say, it's relative. It's all relative. But anyway, so Jamie, you're our guest this week. So why don't you start the ball rolling? What's your first big BHP choice?
Well, the first one is actually a car I've been genuinely considering for a bit. And it's an Audi. And I'm not a huge Audi fan, but it is the RS6, specifically the C6 with the 5-litre V10 twin turbo. Mm-hmm. Stupid crazy engine.
Wonderful.
There's a couple of reasons I like it. Obviously, number one is because it's big power. Most of them were advanced estates, which is lovely practical car to have. But the reason I haven't ever pulled the trigger on it is I'm terrified of how much they cost to keep on the road, because every little job is engine out.
Yes.
So, and they have a couple of little, obviously the main one is they have a main seal at the back of the crank, which is about a 50 pence seal. The actual cost of the seal is about 50p. But it's 2 days stripping the car completely to get to it, and everything else is with it. But I just want 600 horsepower in my life, basically.
It's basically a Lamborghini engine and a family estate car. Why would you not want that?
Yeah. But there's all sorts of weird tricks with them. I'm fairly sure the sump lines run over the wheel arch on one of them, so, and then they rot out. And then obviously, because who wants to put a nice oil line where you get mud and dirt and whatever else and crud? And that's not going to rust at all, is it? What a good idea. there's a few faults with them. But I just, for something that's that much power, I think it's fantastic.
I applaud that choice, Jamie. I think that's an excellent...
Brave, but very cool.
Non-Ford choice. I think I applaud you there. So go on in, Joe. What's your first one?
So I am a man who likes a bargain. As you well know, I shop at Primark. I do my grocery shopping at Aldi. So I thought, I'm going to go on the lower end of what is quite a high budget anyway. So I will say it hasn't got 600 horsepower, but you get a lot for what you get. So my first nomination, particularly off the back of Japfest, is the Nissan 350Z. Because 3.5-litre V6, 186 horsepower in the earlier cars, 310, I think, in the later ones, 55-mile-an-hour car, 60 in sub-6 seconds, manual rear-wheel drive, proper sports car, and you can get into one for less than $3,000 at the moment. Yes, it'll be a bit high mileage and a bit crusty around the arches, but actually, what a car for the money. They sound great. They look great. I think that is a proper future classic in the making. And if you get a pre-2006 one, you're not going to be murdered on the tax either. I think they're super, super cool. And actually, in a world where almost every Japanese sports car, MX-5 included, is on the way to five figures or more, the fact you could still get a proper bona fide Japanese sports car, rear-wheel drive, manual, you know, you don't have to go for some weird automatic version or a really low-powered version to get 300 horsepower rear-wheel drive V6 for less than $5,000, absolute bargain, and I kind of want one.
I really like those. There was a few of those at Silverstone, of course, on Sunday.
Great to learn the drifting as well, Joe. So if you want to go drifting, ideal beginner's car for drifting.
Absolutely, yeah. I think they're probably cool.
It's the big door handles that bug me about a 350Z.
Yes, you said about this.
I don't know why it bothers me, but it does, and I want them to change them. I want someone to design a retrofit, more subtle looking thing. It looks like it should be for a cabin holder in an airplane or something. They're massive.
Yeah, it's not the most elegant. Well, also, that continued inside where it's got that rear strut brace thing, which also then means you can't get anything in the boot, which means you're not getting a set of golf clubs back there, which, depending on your inclination, is a good or a bad thing. But yeah, I will say, you know, you have to be careful because they can rock because they're Japanese, obviously. And if you go for a later one, the tax is murderous. And then they are thirsty. You know, there's a lot of things you have to give up, but when you think that some of the other Japanese sports cars like S2000s, RX7s, Supras, blah, 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 they're 10, 20, 30, 40 grand. And a good Z can be had for $5,000. Why would you not?
Yeah, very good choice. Very good choice. I went Japanese as well with my first one. Like, we were influenced by our weekend's activities. But I went with the Mitsubishi 3000 GT.
Ooh!
Now, I think this is big in quite a number of respects, actually, because it's quite a big, weighty old thing. I think at the time, when it was launched in whenever it was, mid-90s, it was often compared to the Mazda RX-7 of the day as well.
And the 300ZX, yeah.
But actually, it's probably a bit cumbersome compared to those, but it's still got, what, 25 horsepower, something like that, sub 6 seconds, 0-60 time. And I did get a picture. I don't know if the screen could pick it up. Oh, but in
it
red.
Me of Gran Turismo. That's what the car used to start out with on Gran Turismo as a kid when you're playing it on the PlayStation.
Yeah, exactly.
They're a little bit brutish, and probably the power to weight ratio is not as good as it could be. But I don't know, as a sort of a big power sort of oddball, I'd go with one of those. I think they're really cool.
They're very cool. And also the value proposition as well, because that one you just showed there was 10 grand. For those of you listening, it was an eBay ad for a 10 grand one. But obviously, when you think about its contemporaries, you know, a Supra is 30 or 40 grand, as is a Skyline, as is an RX-7. Even a 300ZX is knocking on for 20 grand now.
I did look at a Supra, actually. I did see a late 80s Supra. Might have even been a 91 car just before they went to the newer the shape muscle, in 93.
Yeah. I did see a ZX actually as well, but within budget, Joe, that was on my also list.
Okay.
I didn't quite get a Japanese spoiler. I didn't quite get a Japanese car in my three, but that was the other one. Was
all right. What is your second choice then, Jamie? What's your follow-on from that?
Oh, I went all Premiership footballer for my second choice, and then a Bentley Continental GT, just because how can you get a 100 grand motor? And that one was actually sold on the market recently, 2 or 3 months ago, for 10 grand. A 6-litre W12 twin turbo, looked pretty decent, actually. Looked in decent nick for £10,340. It's just like, bargain. How much more car do you want for the money? And it's, again, I wouldn't want to run it. And every time I went to the garage, I would need to take out another mortgage. But head in the sand, I've got a Bentley. No. And then,
yeah. I think that's it. If you can put to one side the ruinous costs of keeping those things on the road, or perhaps repairing that 10 grand one so it's fit for purpose. But what a car.
Yeah,
what
a car. That's a 200 mile an hour car, realistically.
Yeah. I think you wouldn't actually use it that much. I mean, like we're saying, with these kind of cars, they're not everyday drivers, are they? I bought a Focus RS brand new because I wanted to be able to use it every day. And after 6 years, I sold it. It had 16,000 miles on the clock. So it's just like, there's absolutely, those cars, you don't use them all the time. So actually, it might not be as bad as you think. Fingers crossed.
So go on in, Joe. What's your next choice, sir?
I've gone for another humble choice, but one with real potential. So obviously, when you think 90s turbo performance car, highly tunable, the words that come to mind are Ford Cosworth. That was the era of the Sapphire Cosworth, Escort Cosworth, blah, blah, blah. But they're now silly money. They're well out of this budget. So I've gone for the thinking man's Cosworth, which is the Rover 220 Tomcat Turbo.
I love those when they first come out.
So cool.
I still do.
2-litre turbocharged T-Series, 220-odd horsepower at the box, but they're well capable of well beyond 300, 350-ish. Top speed's in the 150s. 0-60 in about 6 seconds. They look great. That R8 Coupe is a fantastic bit of design, particularly if you get a pre-facelift one. I think they're fabulous.
Never mind the power. Do they all have the Targa roof, the 220?
Yes, they
turbos?
Do. Targa roof as well.
I mean, that's got around 20 horsepower alone.
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah, I think they're fantastic. And they don't come to market very often, but when they do, even the mint ones are less than 15 grand. So you get a lot of car for you. And again, the sort of Cosworth you'd get for that money would be picked up with a dustpan and brush.
Yeah, you'd get bits of a Cosworth for that if you're lucky.
You'd get the VIN number. So yeah, Rover Tomcat Turbo, again, it's a rarity. Oh, 100%.
Very good choice. Very good choice.
I wouldn't say the Cosworth rival, but I'll tell you what, they're actually an underrated car. They are, and I commend that one.
Yeah, I want one.
The phrase "talk steer" was probably invented for it, but had the Escort RS Turbo not already grabbed it? But I don't know. But yeah. Joe and I were playing with Porsches earlier in the week, and
as you do,
it got me sort of looking at some of Porsche's finest. So you could argue it's not necessarily big horsepower, but I would say it's theatrical horsepower. I found a 968 Cabriolet.
Ooh, that's a rare car now.
Cabriolet.
11995, gentlemen.
Okay.
240 horsepower, 156 mile an hour top speed, there or thereabouts, 6.5 seconds to 60. Plus, you'd look really cool.
Yeah.
So I think, that was my sort of choice. I always like the 944, but actually I think I prefer the 968 as that kind of last hurrah of that generation of car.
Yeah, and, the platform evolved so well up to that point. I did film with one. I did a video of one a few years back. Sadly, the footage was lost, so you'll never see it, listeners and viewers. But it just felt like the ultimate 944. Just take that platform, absolutely perfected. Like you say, it was quick without actually feeling scarily fast. And you get the impression it would sit on the Autobahn at 150 all day long. Yeah, I commend that. It's not necessarily the most thrilling or exciting choice, but I think that's a very... a sensible one. I like that.
Probably a bit like Jamie's Bentley choice. You probably need to know a good Porsche specialist to keep it on the road, and that won't necessarily be cheap, but I think it would be worth it because I don't think you're going to lose money on that car either. I think it's going to run. But go on in there, Jamie. What's your third and final choice, sir?
This one, I went a bit older for this one. And this was actually, give a bit of backstory for everybody. This one was inspired by a cross-country trip from Somerset to East Anglia that I did over the Easter weekend with my kids in the back, who wouldn't stop fighting and just wouldn't stop just going on and on and on. So I'm thinking, I need something bigger and more luxurious and a load of toys. And ideally, what I'd wanted was a limo. So when they start kicking off, you can just put the partition up and not hear them. That's what I really want. So obviously, naturally, big car, loads of toys, you're talking S-Class. And I found an S-Class Merc 4, a 1992 J-Reg one.
So that's a W1.
Yeah. It was up at 10 grand. Oh. It'd done a few miles, 140,000 miles, but it was up for £10,000. And again, it's that whole like, what a load of car for the money. And being a Merc is probably not as bad as my other two choices in terms of keeping on the road.
So no, that's
probably the sensible one, actually.
Is that a 500, that one?
600 SEL, so 6-litre V12, whatever they are.
So that's practical. You could even sell that as the family wagon. That's the best choice.
Yeah.
You can win when you go down the pub because that's a derivative of the engine that was used in the Pagani Zonda.
Is it?
It is.
There we go.
It's got a fridge, so I don't even have to stop to feed the kids on that long journey. What?
That sounds great. That would be an airport run wagon as well. I think that would be that's a superb choice.
Yeah.
So go on then, Joe. Top that, sir.
Yes. So I've gone sort of inspired by a car that I've always loved and I've always wanted one and I've never made it happen. And if truth be told, I'm not sure I'd be brave enough or financially gifted enough to make it happen. I've gone for a British car with an Australian accent, the Vauxhall Monaro.
Oh,
so for those of you who don't know, it's based on the Holden Monaro, which is an Australian big muscle car thing. In the early ones, 5.7 litre V8, it's the Chevy LS engine that we got in the C5 Corvette. So you're sort of 300 some odd horsepower, 320, 330 out the box. Then it went up to 6.2, where you're knocking on for 400 horsepower. It's big, it's lazy. It's not going to blast around the Nürburgring at any great pace, but for just covering distance in comfort and at pace, it looks the business, it sounds incredible, they're uber cool, and if you're willing to stomach the fuel bills, you can get into an early one for less than 15,000 quid and find me a cooler car for that money.
Proper manual as well, so proper driver's car.
Yeah, you can get a manual one. Yeah, and they're right-hand drive, you know, and the actual support for them is pretty good because they're a Holden and they were sold in America as a Pontiac. You might not buy many bits in this country, but you will get the bits for it. So actually, it's not a difficult car to own in theory.
I like it. It's a very left-field choice, but actually a very cool one.
Yeah, I'm a big, big fan. I mean, I wouldn't suit it at all, but I don't care. I've got a V8.
Okay, well, regular viewers and listeners will remember that there's a certain mark that almost always features in my buying roundups. And I'm sorry to disappoint, but this week is no exception. Gentlemen, I'm going with the Jaguar S-Type R as my final choice.
Great choice.
You can go newer. You can get the XF in the V8 with the SV8 one in the early years and the XFR in the later ones. But S-Type R is obviously a little bit more retro. That styling is a bit Marmite. Some people will love it and some people will hate it. But if you buy an S-Type R and you're sitting inside it, you don't have to look at the outside, whatever happens. It's 400 horsepower. It's really easy to drive. I've had one. So they're really easy to drive at low speed and they're just thunderous on a long motorway blast as well. You can still buy them for sort of a few thousand pounds. The good examples are now north of 10, but I still think for the money. And actually, if you buy a pre-06 one, the road tax is 450 or something rather than 760 or something. It's sensible economic driving. If you're saving £300 a year in road tax, you can put that towards servicing.
Yeah, that's very, yeah, there you go, consumer advice. And I'm going to challenge the styling on that by saying I think the S-Type R got it right. I think that is a genuinely, like, let's not call it a pretty car, but I think by the time you've got the flared arches and the big wheels and everything else, it's got a muscularity to it. It actually works. I think the S-Type R is a genuinely good looking car. And I drove one for a video a couple of years ago and just thought, this might be, of all the Jags of that era, the S-Type R might be my pick of them. I think it's fabulous. Crucially, there's a number of tuning companies around, and I happen to know that with a steel intake pipe on, take the plastic trunking off and put a steel intake pipe on them, they sound filthy. They sound absolutely incredible. So yes, I would highly endorse that.
No, 100%. So that's our buying roundup segment, gents. What I'm keen to know is, what are you up to in the near future involving cars? So not popping down to Aldi or Lidl to get your supermarket bargains, Joe. So Jamie, go on and you can start the ball rolling. What are you up to?
Mondeo, basically, is what we've been doing. That beloved Mondeo that has been a year and a bit in the making. I insight here for our viewers, because you won't see this in the mag or on the website, because I made a bit of a mistake. We went down to flat the paint after the 30 arches and stuff are repaired and the back end we painted. We went to flat and polished the paint. And I went a bit heavy. So we spent all day yesterday trying to polish back some scratches that I put into some fresh paint. We got them in the end, thankfully. But yeah, so it's some 2,000 paper that I bought off of a big online shop that I won't mention. Probably wasn't 2,000. I bought a load of 2,000 grit and a load of 3,000 grit, sort of wet and dry, just to sort of knock the high spots off and flat it back. The idea of just mopping it back and getting a nice sort of shine going over the whole car. Mark down at Four Parts R Us wasn't best pleased when I went, oh, I could do that. Done that. Rubbed it all down. After the first coat or the first pass with the compound, you look back and you're like, that hasn't touched any of the scratches. There's still loads and loads of scratches in there. What are we going to do? So what was supposed to be a quick pop down, take some photos and have a little play yesterday took all day. But we got there and it's looking good, actually. So that's that one. It's not far off its MOT soon, with the idea of, I'm still targeting Classic Ford Show, although that is becoming more and more of a challenge, so that might not happen. But yeah, that's the target for what we've been up to.
So we have done some Mondeo ST24 content previously on the channel, and there'll be further updates in due course. But this was a very much a bargain purchase, wasn't it, Jamie? How much did we pay for it?
£500 paid for the car. So it's looking a lot better than a £500 bang an hour.
That's because we spent about £50,000 on it to do it up. But
don't worry about that.
maybe not quite that much.
You only remember the purchase price. It's fine. No, I'm really keen to see that. I'm more excited about that Mondeo than I have been about one of our project cars for a long time, just because that era of car really speaks to me. I'm very keen for that.
I'm very much looking forward to seeing it. So that's great. So go on in, Joe. What are you up to?
Well, following on from what I said last week, since the weather is still gorgeous, the sun seems to be shining, so I'm back out on bikes as much as possible. So yeah, there's more bike stuff happening. We did read the comments. Those of you that said you wanted more bike stuff, received and understood. We will be doing some bike stuff in the near future, hopefully. But yeah, so more bike things. I'm tinkering on my little Fiat Seicento, which for those of you that don't know, was my first car, which I've owned for 11 years come this October, which I still have. And I'll be messing around with that and fixing things and breaking things and messing around with things. And there's always little stuff. There's always little things need tinkering, like one of the door handles needs painting and little odds and sods like that. It doesn't amount to much, but it's just having a laugh. And that's what I like having with sort of a fairly, yeah, the car means a lot to me in sentimental terms, but in monetary terms, it's still a cheap, simple little car. So I can go and have a go and tinker on it, and I don't have to go and spend £500 on some carbon fiber bits or whatever for it. I can just have a laugh. Yeah, that's where I'm getting my enjoyment at the moment, is simple pleasures. But yeah, that tinkering on the Fiat and using the bike is my weekend. But Phil, what about you?
Very good. Yes, well, this weekend we're trying to make that a very much a non-car weekend, having spent last weekend at Silverstone. And actually in a couple of weeks, we've got Classic Ford Show coming up. So I've got to try and take a little bit of a pause, but we're going to jump in the Nissan Elgrand camper van. There is a video coming up on the channel later in the year. I think about June time, I think we've got that. But so we've got a 2.5 litre V6 Nissan Elgrand E51 2010, I think it is. And we're going to take that down to lovely Cornwall for a family weekend. It's our first time out in the camper van in earnest. We do kind of use it over the winter just to keep the cogs turning and things, but this will be the first weekend away with it this year. So it's just a lovely thing to drive. It's not, because it's not a clattery old diesel, it's also not a manual. It's actually really easy to drive. The suspension is really bouncy. I suspect the dampers probably aren't fit for hauling around 2 tons of camper van luggage, kitchenettes and everything else. But on a motorway, it's just lovely. And obviously, when we go down to the south of France with it, and pop it on a French auto route, and it could sit there all day, 30 degree heat and just air conditioning on, and it's a lovely thing.
And it's good on track, as it turns out.
And it turns out they're great on track as well. Not that I would dare take our one. You'd end up scattering all the kitchen stuff everywhere.
If we get 500 likes on this video.
Bizarrely, there is actually a car show on down in Cornwall.
Going to Offset show, are you camping down there to go to Offset?
So, but I suspect I'll be a brave person to suggest that to the family. Hey, kids, let's all go down to a car show. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's a lovely part of the world. You'll often see some nice sort of modern classics still in daily use down in that neck of the woods. So, looking forward to it. So,
excellent.
Yeah. Well, look, we've almost wrapped up, gents, but we should do our final bit of the regular chat show, which is I'd like us to just reveal what cars have caught our eye this week. What ones have piqued our interest that have meant that we've wanted to peruse the classifieds. So
once of the week, if you like.
Yes, exactly. You're not committing to buy one of these, but you would like to maybe if the opportunity arose. So Jamie, go on then, guess what's your shopping
mine
choice?
Mine is a car that I regret actually not buying. And I sent you a link to it in January when it was on auction. It was an auction with the market actually. Joe mentioned Monaro earlier on, and this is the successor to that, the VXR8. But this particular example had a supercharger on it, so it was the 6.2 LS2 version, 6-speed T56 Tremec manual gearbox, dark grey, obviously loud exhaust, whatever else. And it sold for $13,000, and I'm like, I wish. Obviously, wrong time of year. I think the auction ended on January the 7th or something or other. So like a few days before my birthday, I should have just picked myself for my birthday. Yeah, trying to find that money when you haven't got it is a bit steep. But again, what a load of car for the money. And that was something that I've got this theory that if you look at how sort of the whole sort of car community has gone, the Fast Forward, for example, have gone and had their peak. Then JDM's now come and had its peak. What's the next big thing going to be? And for me, I think it's going to be, in the modern world of EVs and hybrids, it's going to be those big-engined, silly cars. So things like the RS6 that I mentioned earlier on,
yeah,
and a VXR8 and stuff like that, where you've got a stupidly big engine in a car, I think that's going to be the next big thing that that people will hold on to. Because obviously, they're not coming back, are they? Let's be honest, they're not coming back in the way the market's got. So no one in their right mind is ever going to build a new car with a 6-litre engine in it. I'm justifying that it's actually going to be a good investment. That's what I'm trying to do. So.
I like that. That's man maths right there.
No, who needs a pension? Good. Exactly. It's fine. Go on in, Joe. What have you been looking at, sir?
Oh, only one thing this week. So we went and visited our new best friends at Paragon Porsche this week, and we filmed a trio of videos, which you will see gradually over the next few months on the channel. And one of them was me driving what was, I said at the time, it's my childhood dream car, and that's absolutely true, but it probably is. All things told, I'd find it hard not to want to buy one. I drove a Porsche 911 997, and I've wanted one of those cars since I was about 8 years old, which some of you will argue was yesterday. And it was just fabulous. It was exactly as good as I hoped it would be in every single. It arguably was better. And the example from Paragon was absolutely mint, which really helped. It was just fabulous in every single way. And they're wonderful, wonderful cars. And if I hadn't just bought a house, I'd have already bought a 997. They are just fabulous and wonderful, and if someone would like to buy me one, I'd be eternally grateful. But yeah, in an ideal world, it would be probably a pre-facelift car, because I prefer the purer lines of that. It would be a Carrera 2S with a manual gearbox. It would have the lobster claw wheels, the 5-spoke, because those for me are the best Porsche wheel. And color, I don't care. It can be brown, pink, burgundy, yellow, what, I do not care. But yeah, a Porsche 997, I think realistically I'm gonna have to, you know, people talk about a 5-year plan, and I sort of think I need to realign my life trajectory to get me to one. Because it was just wonderful.
There we go. Well, you should speak to Dan, the editor of 911 Porsche World, see if he'll let you have a play in his or something, or you could run it for journalistic purposes.
Well, yes, it needs running in. But no, it was wonderful, and I really do want one.
That was a fun day, I have to say. I'll come back to that perhaps in a future chat show. But for me, this is one of many rabbit holes I've been down this week, but it started with, I'm going to look at Subarus.
Off the back of Japfest, I'd assume.
Yeah, and actually, it didn't make our J-Tin list last week, actually, when we were picking our favourite Japanese cars. So I've always liked Subaru Foresters.
Mm.
I just think they're really cool. And if you really, you get bonus points if you get one of those hot ones that you can import
SCR,
from Japan.
Yeah.
But they're really fading. You get the early ones are just really hard to find now. But anyway, so I start classified perusal by looking at early Foresters if I can. And then you really struggle. But then you scratch Forester off the list and you just search for all Subarus available in the UK. And before you knew it, I'm looking at the Legacy Outback with the 2.5 litre engine in it.
Lovely.
Thought that was fantastic. But I then found myself in a deep pit looking at Subaru Justy four-wheel drives, little hatchback. It was about $4,500, really quirky. That thing would go anywhere. I know, Joe, you've got misgivings about SUVs, but even you would like this little buzz box, four-wheel drive, unpretentious. That thing would go anywhere. That would survive the apocalypse, I suspect, and it's less than $5,000. And I just thought, oh, I'd so have one of those. That would be brilliant. I have nowhere to park it. I have no need for it whatsoever. And yet I spent a good 10 minutes trying to justify in my head why I should have this Subaru Justy four-wheel drive.
That's quite cool. I think we talked about this last week. That's the kind of car where you would win a car meet in it, because you turn up in it and you'd get everyone coming up to going, oh my God, what's that? So
And you deliberately wouldn't polish it. You'd leave it as flat and as patinaed as you could possibly make it. So it looks like it's been pulled off a farm track.
It for you.
You can make it look not polished.
I can make it, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, use some of your, that sounds like a great idea. Well, look, gents, that has been fabulous fun. Thanks very much for joining us, Jamie, on this motoring adventure. Yes, thank you all very much for your comments and your support of our new weekly chat show. We will be back next Friday for another rendition. In the meantime, thanks for watching or listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe on the YouTube channel or tick follow. And don't forget to comment on a podcast platform if you're listening through a platform of your choice. But in the meantime, thanks very much. We'll see you again next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.